One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, welcome to Red Men Weekly. Steve Hoare here, bringing you the best clips from our Red Men Plus podcast each and every week. Yeah, just to let you know, if you want any of these shows that you're about to listen to in complete form, then yeah, check out redmenplus.com. You get them as videos or podcasts each and every week. Speaking of one of our shows then, the transfer show, it was Dan Clubb, it was Sam Walker, and it was Ian Young talking about Liverpool's midfield, Fabinho and Amrabat in particular. So yeah, let's check out what the guys had to say.
So I'm gonna ask you what type of midfielder we think we should get, and I think the Fabinho point personally is the biggest one here. Whoever we sign has to be able to do that role.
Play DM because he needs a bit of competition. He needs rotating a bit because I think he's played too much as well. When he's needed to come out, we've not been able to take him out. He needs help. Fabinho doesn't become a bad player overnight. He was the best DM in the world 18 months ago. That just doesn't stop. Unless there's something wrong, he could be carrying an injury. We don't know the ins and outs of things, do we? We know the specifics of what's going on, but he definitely needs help. And I think the guy from Morocco, which I'm sure you're going to speak about,
I think that's thrown out there. I think last year he played a lot of football, but this year he has been pulled out the side a lot. Henderson played, he didn't start against Man United, he's been a couple of other games, but he hasn't started. He has been pulled out, he's just not in good form. But the DM thing for me is interesting, because I don't think a like-for-like DM would help. We lost Wijnaldum, and we've lost Keita this year, who's quite, both of those two are quite combative. They tackle a lot, they intercept a lot, they keep the ball well, they stick the bottoms out and do well with the ball at their feet. We haven't got anyone like that. Harvey Elliott's not combative. He's a very talented young player. Thiago's obviously missed a lot of football. We need someone who, possibly could play in the six, but you've got Henderson and Fabinho for that. We need a combative player who can battle and get up and down on the right or left hand side, my personal opinion.
That's interesting, actually. I've not heard many people say that, to be honest with you. Most people I speak to are more of these, and my own personal opinion is that we do need someone who can give Fabinho that rest. You obviously clearly think that's Henderson. The issue we've had, I suppose, in all of this is when there has been opportunities to maybe give Fabinho a rest for Henderson, Henderson's needed elsewhere because there's injuries in different places. So I get your point entirely. Whereas if we had the extra body in there, maybe it'd be a signing, or Keita or Melo being fit, or Curtis Jones being fit for that matter, would be a start. But maybe that would give Fabinho the rest he needs. It's definitely an option, and it'd be interesting to see how Liverpool approach it, actually. Because I personally would be a DM in January and then that man Jude in the summer. But the last one we're going to talk about is a move that we spoke about last week on the show, actually. And it's kind of ramped up ever since. I think we kind of, not dismissed it, but weren't sure. But the noise is getting louder. And it's Sofyan Amrabat having an absolutely outstanding World Cup. I mean, as are Morocco, but he's really at the heart of it as well, Ian. I'm just going to get your opinion. So basically, they're now, Klopp is apparently urging Liverpool board to go and buy Amrabat this summer. He's out of contract in 2024 as well. I think they're talking to like £30-40 million to get the deal done. Is this one, Ian, that you think is a goer?
I'd be happy with him in January. He's not that big, massive signing that we'd all like to see, but he'll come in and he'll do his job, and like I said, he'll give Fabinho a rest. I think one of our biggest issues, I think, in midfield, I don't know if you think the same, Sam, is one of our priorities when we used to be signing players was how robust they were and how the injury record was closely looked at. Our injuries this last two and a half years has been horrendous, and I don't know whether that's down to the players we're signing or what's going on in training, but something has changed from when Klopp first arrived, because when we first got players in, they didn't get injured. This wasn't something that happened. So maybe we need to look at them stats a little bit more. Maybe we need to find somebody who's a bit more robust rather than just what he can do on the pitch.
Well, I think that's the point with Wijnaldum, wasn't it? His main asset, he was a very good footballer, we shouldn't forget that as well, because a lot of people just said, oh, he plays all the time, he's boss, but he was a lot more than that. But there's no, his durability was absolutely key to what we did so well. And Amrabat, just on that, his injury record isn't too bad. Actually, he's missed one game this season with back trouble. Sounds a lot like myself, to be honest with you. aside from that, he's missed little one-game spells here and there, it seems. Never anything. He had a bad ankle injury in 18-19 that meant he missed 16. But aside from that, it's not too bad. Yeah. I'd like it to be absolutely clear, to be honest with you, Sam, because that's what I want to see. But, yeah, so Amrabat down. One to consider. I think before this World Cup, if I'd had this conversation, most people would have gone, oh, come on, mate, what are you talking about? What about now?
Yeah, this is the thing with the World Cup, isn't it? Is that also playing for your country, if you're from somewhere like Morocco, who are very proud and very passionate, and they've invested a lot of money into the football excellence centre there now, there's an opportunity for them to do something. I think when you play for other countries, like, I don't know, like Spain or England, there's always next time. Whereas I think when you play for a country that isn't as an elite team, and you know the opportunity of playing, you know, in a climate that, you know, a lot of the players who will have played in Morocco in other games and at home international games will have been a bit used to, because it's quite hot, humid. It's an opportunity for them, so they're giving it everything. And we've been stung before with our lad Stuf, and not necessarily as much Diao, because I think he was a good servant for the club, but we've been stung before. Other clubs have been stung before with good international tournaments.
Yeah.
Got to be careful. I don't know enough about him as a profiled player to know whether he's got all the bits and pieces that we need to come in and just slot in. Because, yeah, if he's a DM, fantastic, but all it takes for Fabinho to come back, have a great game, first game back, and then pick his form up. What happens then? Does he even get a kick? You know, we've only got two games over Christmas, or we might play in the FA Cup then. You know, I just don't know enough about him, to be honest. If we sign him, fantastic, another member of the squad who's played at a high level, but I'm just not 100% sure he's what we're looking for. Interesting sort of caveat to that is that usually by now, someone's come out and said,
dampened it.
That's not happening. Yeah. Liverpool are no longer James Pearce, Paul Joyce, whereas actually nothing's being said. And when there's silence with Liverpool, there's usually something to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but like I say, the noise seems to be getting loud, if anything, which surprised me, because much like yourself, I was really unsure on the potential deal. I mean, his previous club, the Fiorentina now, he's 26 years old, he's played for Utrecht, Hellas Verona as well, and Feyenoord, and his career's never really kicked into gear up until this World Cup, essentially. And there was obviously interest in Liverpool prior to the tournament, and this tournament has clearly kick-started that again, and he's having a really good time, and he does fit the DM mold. But like you say, Simon, it's an interesting point here. And if Fabinho comes back and suddenly kicks into gear again, likelihood is, because Fabinho's a better DM than Amrabat. I'm happy to sit here and say it, like, he is top form. Fabinho's a better footballer, so there's a chance we sign him, maybe 30, maybe 40 million, and he just doesn't play that much if Fabinho starts again, isn't there?
There is, but isn't that one of the caveats of being one of the best teams in the world, that you have good players you don't get to kick around?
But is that what we need now, though? Yeah. Do we need players who are going to come and play? If he gets it, we need, there's guys who are injured now we need replacing, which is why I said about that number eight who can get up and down.
Yeah, and you're right, but just the problem is with that is that this guy isn't 21, 22, he's 26. He's not waiting. You know what I mean? He's in his peak, essentially, now he's in his prime. He should be playing all the time, to Sam's point. And if Fabinho comes back in his prime and he gets going again and he's flying, then we've signed a player who should be at the prime of their career, who's just sat on the bench. If he's 21, 22, watching Fabinho learning and filling in, like Bajetic, but he's obviously even younger again, that's fine. But I don't know, to me, and it just feels like this 30, 40 million could be spent wiser.
You want Fabinho to come back, don't you? You want that Fabinho back, so I don't know. I'm with you, so now.
Change your mind.
The thing is with the profile of it, though, he might be able to play as a number eight, or if Klopp's really interested in developing a slightly different system, he might be able to play as two, or 1-8 who's a bit more advanced, and 1-8 who's not as much. And the other thing with this is as well is, like, you know, there's lots of people saying, I know he's not on the show as a person, but that we're interested in Declan Rice. Like, and it's also a situation is, if Liverpool can afford and can get Rice and Bellingham in the summer, those two players would completely revolutionise our team.
Yeah.
And I think, do you then go, well, actually, I'm willing to sort of hold tight, or go and get another loan in January, or hold out, or whatever your plan is, but you know you're getting them two in the summer regardless to where we finish.
Absolutely, yeah.
UEFA coefficient coming in and all that.
Yeah, no one
next year. So like, it might be a case of the, you know, we don't know what's in the pipeline. This fella might have a buyout clause. Enzo Fernandez, those listening, might have a buyout clause. That means you can get him for 45 million in the summer.
Yeah.
So they might wait. You know, you just don't know what's going on there. So it's going to be interesting to see.
Players in foreign leagues, and in particular Portugal, actually often do have buyout clauses. That is something to consider. I mentioned the contract until 27 earlier, but that becomes irrelevant all of a sudden if a buyout clause does come out of the ether. So perhaps, but I think you're right. If Rice and Bellingham are a possibility in the summer, what we did in January would be massively affected. Like, we won't be going anywhere. That Sander Berger deal for 60 million suddenly becomes more relevant.
No, it does,
you know what I mean? Of course it does, because it gives you the option now, which I think we all need. A loan move is also a possibility. Arthur Melo 2.0, here we come again. We'll leave with midfielders there. We'll talk about midfielders who are blue in the face between now and the end of January. I'm almost certain of it.
Nice one to Dan, Sam and Ian there. Right, they're moving on to another midfielder, Enzo Fernandez, linked with Liverpool earlier this week. As soon as he did, I got on the phone to my good mate Aaron Barton from Próxima Jornada. If there's a player in Portugal, Aaron knows about him. Trust me, his knowledge of that league is second to none. So yeah, check out what me and Aaron had to say about the little Argentine.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And
his whole thing has been about he wants them to get back to being a winning club, and he wants to build a winning project. He doesn't want Benfica to just compete. He wants to be in like the semi-finals of the Champions League and competing with sort of Europe's elite. He's going about it the right way because he's built a you know, a good team. The manager there that they brought in, that's a big, you know, signal in sense. Roger Smith, who was at PSV, really top manager who will want to keep hold of his best players at least until the summer. And I think, I think on this occasion, it's a case of the sporting project probably becomes first, because the interest in the likes of Enzo Fernandez, Gonzalo Ramos, that Antonio Silva, even the young centre-half, they're all still going to be there in the summer. They, you know, if clubs want to come in with the release clause, that's a way of them saying, well, look, there was nothing we could do about it. But at the same time, they pocketed, you know, triple figures. But I do think there's some integrity in what he's saying. I mean, this is where we put this out and he ends up selling him for 65 million.
No, but like you say, mate, it would be, you are right. If you've run for a presidency on a promise that, and then you come out in an interview and say, we're not selling him. If you then sell him, already the fans can't believe a word you've said in one of your first interviews. So yeah, I do understand where you're coming from there. Let's move on to the player himself then, because you said he's worth the hype. The floor is yours, Aaron, because I know we spoke on players in the past, and I remember the Luis Diaz conversation we had when he was at Porto, and I was just saying, like, who do Liverpool need to look out for? And you were like, this lad here, and obviously he turned out to be pretty good. where are we up to? Just talk to us about Enzo Fernandez. Why is he so good? What's he good at? What does he do?
He's so highly rated because he's so versatile. He's so good at everything that he tries his hand in. I think when you watch Benfica in the Champions League and you watch them in the Primeira Liga, it's like you're watching two different players. And you're looking at one player and you're thinking you could fit into a team, into a system playing in this. Say when he's in the Champions League and he's putting in, I think he's averaging like 4 tackles a game, which for like a centre mid, I mean, if you look at like the numbers, he's up there in like the top percentile. And then when he's playing sort of in the Primeira Liga and he's playing more of, I mean, a bit further forward maybe, and he's got more license to go when he's got sort of Florentino Luis alongside him, the sort of like two number sixes, one will go, one will stay. He's not putting in as many sort of interceptions or tackles, but then he
he's getting forward more and he's playing like so many like sort of key passes. He can play like, you know, the eye of the needle passes, those type of sort of killer balls. But then at the same time, like, his short passing's amazing as well. He very rarely gives the ball away. And I think something that's it's become sort of underrated, because like fancy long passes and stuff, everyone's like blown away by them. But just his ability to always pick the right pass. And you look at some players like this sometimes and you see they've got really high passing accuracy and you think, oh, it must all be side to side and you know, playing back to the centre halves and stuff. He plays forward but just doesn't give the ball away, because he always picks the right moment, always picks the right opportunity. He had a game recently and I think we put a tweet out on Proxima after that of just like his numbers, and it was against Rio Ave, and you can say, oh, it was the opposite, you know, the opposition or whatever, but you're playing against a team like that who've got 11 men behind the ball basically against Benfica, as those type of teams usually do. And he finished the game with 100% pass accuracy. He didn't give away the ball once. He played 7 long passes, like, and I'm talking like he was spraying it like 30, 35, 40 yards. And I think he played, he got an assist with one of the passes, and he created 3 or 4 big chances that he could have ended the game with a hat trick of assists, and didn't give the ball away once for 90 minutes. And you're just watching him and you think, how can a player like that give the ball away when they never seem to take the wrong option? And as I say, when he's operating in that sort of double six, this like midfield pivot, and he's got attacking players in front of him, he's got sort of a 3 and then like the striker, so Gonzalo Ramos, but he's got the likes of Rafa Silva, David Neres ahead of him. He can pop it off to those players who will want to beat a man, and his position, it means that when he gives it, say, to a winger or a fullback, he'll find himself these little spaces on the edge of the box, and then that's where his sort of attacking instinct will come in as well. He scored 2 volleys for Benfica, 2 of them where he's just hit it on the volley from like quite far out. His ball striking is like amazing. I think it was the second game for Argentina when he came on. I can't remember who it was against, but he scored in this World Cup, scored an absolute belter for Argentina. And he's just got such a, like, his all-round game is just fun to watch. He's just really good to watch. And as I say, when he started the World Cup and he went in the starting 11, I remember I said to like a couple of my mates, if he gets in the team, he'll stay in the team, because he's got something that none of those other midfielders have got, and that's the all-round game. They might excel in certain areas, but someone like him, you can say, right, look, you're going to be playing as the number 6 today, or as Benfica have done, you can put him further forward and say, you know, your players are 8, or you can play even like as a number 10 with a winger either side of you and a striker in front of you in sort of a 4-2-3-1, and he'll just do a job. He's got great close control. His passing's really good. He's versatile. He creates chances as well. He averages like 2 or 3 big chances a game created. And I say it always comes back to, you know, the league that he's playing in. But you look at his numbers in the Champions League when he's asked to do a more defensive role, and he's sensational at doing that as well. So genuinely, I've been waxing about him for months since I first sort of watched them, and I was put onto him by he'll kill me if I don't shout him out, Santi Bowser, his name is, an Argentinian football journalist. I spoke to him before he came, and he was like, Aaron, this kid's the business, like he's the real deal. And I remember I said, like, what's his best position? I wanted to get a gauge on like what he was like. I hadn't watched much of like the Argentinian sort of league. And he was like, I can't even tell you what his best position is. He was like, because he can play as a 6 or an 8 or a 10, and he does it all. Like, he literally can do it all. So I was like, okay, this kid's going to be decent. And he surpassed my expectations, definitely.
That'll do for us if Liverpool can get him over. Yeah, it was Mexico he scored against, by the way. I think he scored an own goal, didn't he, as well, against Argentina? But and he's missed a pen. But we'll gloss over that. He's only... They won't be on the YouTube highlights when the Reds are...
No.
From a Liverpool point of view, Aaron, I know it's not really your area of expertise, obviously you're focused more on the Portuguese football, but Liverpool are linked with Jude Bellingham as well, these are two lads who are going to be very, very expensive. There are some people out there thinking maybe Liverpool are going to finally change and buy 2 of them, because they do need midfielders. You know, Milner's might leave, Oxlade-Chamberlain's going, Keita's going, there's injury issues around Curtis Jones. Jordan Henderson, etc., etc., getting older. So Liverpool might book the trend and go for two of them. But there's a lot of people who will be watching, listen to Scoxy. There's no way. Just history tells us this won't happen. It's going to be one or it's going to be one or the other, essentially. That's been like I've been in a few group chats there, and I was like, from my point of view, they're very different players. They're not. It's like, you know, yet they're both midfielders, and yet they're both young, and yet they're both really expensive. But my thinking, I mean, I might be completely wrong here, but I'm thinking, what, like, they're not really similar. So why would it's not going to be like, oh, we can't get Bellingham, so we go and get Enzo Fernandez. Who's just they are completely different, aren't they? Tell me, I'm not going mental by when I say that.
No, they can play like. Obviously, as you say, they're both centre mids, and depending on what you're asking of them, because Bellingham's got things in his sort of arsenal that Enzo, like, I think was it who England were playing the other day, and he created one of the goals. He like got his head onto it, sprinted through midfield, like just went through the gears, and you Senegal, think Enzo, yeah, I think it was yeah, and then you think he played the pass into Foden, maybe yeah. was it, and yeah. something like that. That's Enzo Fernandez is good at driving through midfield, but not in that way. Yeah. Like that was just like sheer, like the athleticism of him just to move through the gears. Whereas Enzo is a little bit more cute as a player. I think it's a lot more sort of close control, that sort of side of it. But no, yeah, I don't think that they're not carbon copies of each other, but they're not worlds apart either. I can see it being a case of one or the other, just simply because of the versatility of Enzo, and just be like, okay, this is where we want you to play. Okay, yeah, you know, he can do a job there. No, we need you to play further forward. Yeah, he can do a job there. And to be fair, Bellingham, from what I've seen him, again, I haven't seen that much of him, only when he's been playing for England, and I haven't watched a lot of England. Saw a couple of games for Dortmund, but he seems like another player who's just got it all. So I think, you know, if Liverpool are going to go for one of them, and you're sort of umming and ahhing over which one, I think whoever you're going to end up with, you're going to end up with a player that's potentially going to be world class, or you know, maybe in Bellingham's case already is world class, whatever your views on that are. But yeah, I think if Liverpool got both, like, it'd be curtains for everyone else. Like, but then I think it'd also be curtains for the bank balance. You'd probably spend nearly 250 mil on two players.
Thanks very much to me, really, I suppose, for having a fire interview with Aaron. Yeah, let's go along with that one. Speaking of me, I'm on the next clip as well. Feels like this might be a little bit of a vanity project on my behalf, or maybe it just turns out that I'm the one who does all the work around here. Who knows? You guys can make your own decisions for yourselves. But yeah, this week, Journo Insight again, me and Goal.com's Neil Jones talking about a wide range of topics. Unfortunately, one of those topics happened to be the injury to Luis Diaz, Diogo Jota's situation as well. How are Liverpool going to cover? So we touch on Kurt Jones, we touch on Fabio Carvalho, a little bit of Arthur Melo even. He even gets a mention yet. So yeah, check out this clip from the Journo Insight Show.
Roll your eyes.
Are you starting on a negative note? But we're going to have to, I think, Neil. It's the Luis Diaz stuff. So
yeah.
Obviously, it happened a few days ago. We haven't spoke since. He flew home from the camp. There were suggestions that he might need surgery straight away from Colombia and stuff like that. Turns out that was accurate, I think, as Mrs. confirmed by putting an Instagram post out as well. If you ever need any proof, there's Luis Diaz in hospital bed. It turns out it's a different injury as well, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because it's the other side of the knee. I always think if it's the same one again, that might be a big issue, but now it's the other side of the knee, and it was, either way, whatever it is, he's out till March at the earliest now, and that's a massive blow.
It's a huge blow, and it's something that, obviously because of the World Cup being on at the same time, I think it just gets lost a little bit. But I read Paul Gorse's interview with Andy Robertson from Dubai, and he said, you know, the lads are devastated for Luis, and you know, we'll all be there for him. And you can have a temptation sometimes to think a little bit like, come on, it's only 3 months, you know, but when you think about it,
it's October, you got injured, so
yeah, it's 5 months, yeah. But also, you think about it, you're right, starting on a negative note, and I'm sorry, but that could be Liverpool's season done and dusted by the time he gets back. You know, he could be coming back to out the Champions League, out the FA Cup, out the League Cup, and facing, you know, a real battle to get in the top four. So he's missing the sort of the key chunk of the campaign, really, you know, those Real Madrid games, you know, the chance to try and build some ground after the resumption of the Premier League season. So it is a huge blow for him, especially as he was someone who, what he'd done was he'd brought a sort of a freshness and a bit of a change in mood to the team, you know, with his
I think Jurgen Klopp or Pep Linders, maybe both, said he was pure joy with the football. He's about pure joy, and to lose that from the squad, never mind how good a player he is, to lose that, maybe that sort of personality from the team, I think is a huge blow for Liverpool, but also for him. I mean, he's already, you know, he would have probably looked at that injury in October and thought, well, do you know what, at least we didn't qualify for the World Cup, I'll have a month, sort of 6 weeks to get myself back. He probably would have had everything circled on that Boxing Day or the Manchester City game to then get it. The setback, I think, is it's sad for him. And, you know, you've just got to hope a little bit that Liverpool keep the flame burning while he's injured, you know, and that he's got something to sort of come back with it, with an incentive in, you know. That would be the flip side to what I've just said there with the negativity would be, imagine everything was still up in the air and everything was still on the table and you had Luis Diaz coming back in fresh and, you know, bright for the last sort of 6-7 weeks of the campaign.
I've just looked here, Liverpool, because we say the first game in March, before then Liverpool played 12 games. So from the City game on the 22nd right up until they played the 25th of February against Palace, then yeah. The first game in March, and there might be more, by the way, because if Liverpool progress in the Cups
could be a League Cup final, I think, potentially in there, yeah. So
could be League Cup game, well, there could be League Cup games, definitely. There will be an FA Cup game to beat Wolves, so it's at least 12, and then the first game in March is the 4th. If he's not back, that's unlikely, so it's at least, you're looking at least 12, maybe more. That's a huge, that you mentioned before, like, you think, oh, 2 months isn't that bad, but because it is so condensed, and also the fact that, and it compounds, is obviously no Jota as well.
Yeah,
I saw James Pearce write on his piece the other day, when he done a bit of analysis, he said, like, Liverpool, you know, they've gone from having 6 last year to, or even more, because count Origi and count Minamino, now really there's 3 what you'd call first team forwards, and then you're asking Fabio Carvalho to be the first backup, Oxlade Chamberlain, Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott, moving guys again, like Liverpool have had to do so often. It does feel like, we're down to the main guys, really. And the main worry for me, and again, I hate to skew negative, I hate doing that, but like, that's 12, they can't play all them games. Yeah. Someone's going to get injured. So there's going to have to be points where we're going to have to just accept that Ox is in for a game, or Carvalho's playing left wing, or Harvey's doing a job, or Curtis is doing a job if he gets back fit.
I think Fabio Carvalho's a... really want to put it on him, but I think he is someone who we're going to see a little bit about Fabio Carvalho in the next couple of months, because I mean, let's not forget, let's be positive about Fabio Carvalho. Liverpool beat a lot of good clubs to him. He was Young Player of the Year in the Championship last season, really, you know, big part of Fulham's promotion, so he is a player of pedigree. You would say that he's had an okay start to his Liverpool career. You know, he scored obviously that big goal against Newcastle, played a part in some of the Champions League wins, Rangers away in particular. He started the Merseyside derby. So he's had some moments in a Liverpool shirt. Now I think we need to see Liverpool are going to have to give him some chances. They're going to have to. You know, he's going to, like you say, the fact as well, he can play a couple of different positions. He can play off the left. He can play as a nine, I would imagine. He could sort of step into that Firmino type role. He could probably play if they change the system as a 10 or a midfielder. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of him. And, you know, listen, I'm not saying he's going to be the man who steps up and sort of says, Lewis, who? But that's the challenge for him, really. You know, can you get Liverpool through this period? And if you look last year, you know, when Salah and Mane went off to the African nations, and it was a few, you know, Oxlade-Chamberlain sort of stepped up a bit. Obviously, Diaz came in. Liverpool got through that period. So it's not a case of, oh, this sort of puts the kibosh on everything that Liverpool are doing, but it needs a few of these players, Curtis Jones being another one. Unfortunately, we haven't seen him.
He's another one. He hasn't trained.
You know, I don't think I've seen him in one proper session yet on the camp. I was told by someone that he's just managing his load after, you know, such a complicated injury, but suggests he's not ready at the moment to play games. You've got Naby Keita, you know, sort of everything crossed that he can just sort of at least play sort of 5 or 6 games in the next month. Oxlade-Chamberlain the same. There's a few Hail Marys in there, but at the same time, you know, if the coin falls on the right side, you might just get away with, you know, where we're looking at and say, well, actually, do you know what? Darwin's played this many games. Firmino's played this many games. Carvalho stepped in here. Oxlade-Chamberlain's done there, but like you say, really, you're looking at Salah, you're looking at Nunes, you're looking at Firmino and saying those three cannot go down at any point in the next sort of what, 6 to 8 weeks?
Yeah, you're in trouble, aren't you? Let's go a little bit more positive then. It was nice to see Kay Gordon back. He's had a horrendous year, 10 months out, hasn't played. He's been not fully trained, but he's back outdoors running for a start. The guys at Distant Anfield done a little report on it. Again, cast your mind back to this time almost a year ago when he was about to play a League Cup semi-final. Like, they clearly think highly of him. It's going to ask a lot for him because ideally he would be fit and then maybe he would be one of those options as well. But after 10 months out, it might be a difficult one to say to Kay Gordon, right, you're straight back into... He's going to need months of under-21s, under-23s, whatever it is, to get it back into fitness.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just for game rhythm, really, you know, you're just going to need to give him that chance. I mean, you look at someone like Calvin Ramsey needed a few games anyway. He was sort of fit, but it took Liverpool sort of another month maybe before they were willing to put him in the first team picture. Cade... You're right, like, I mean, it's easy to forget, isn't it, just how exciting a player he is. It's almost like Ben Doe comes and everyone says, oh, he's the one, isn't he? And then it's actually, well, Kate Gordon was in that position, like you say, 12, 18 months ago. So he is a player that's got a lot of potential. You just have to see what it's taken out of him and how long it takes him to get back.
It's a hip injury, wasn't it?
Pelvic, yeah. So I think that's quite a common one with young players, sort of lower back, you know, around that area. I think, I don't know if it's a growth thing or just a common sort of... As your body changes and the amount of football you play or the amount of training you do, so you've got to see how long that takes. I don't think you can put too much on him necessarily. I don't think you can put too much on Ben Doak as a sort of just turned 17, albeit a player of immense promise. You know, Leighton Stewart, you've got him over there at the moment, haven't you? You know, you've got Oakley Cannonier back here, still recovering from his own injury. So there are a lot of sort of young players that you might imagine filling in the Wolves game, for example, or, you know, maybe if you were to get through that and get a lower league side in the cup. We saw last year, didn't we? I think, well, Cade played and then scored in the cup. I think we saw Max Waltman and Frauendorf and a few others. So there are Bobby Clark's another one. Sorry, I forgot him. There are those young players, but like you say, I mean, you're talking about the amount of fixtures Liverpool have got. It's not just the amount of fixtures, it's the importance of those fixtures as well.
He talks himself into a hole.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the first game back, you'd say, oh, League Cup sort of fourth round. Yeah, okay, that's fine. It's Manchester City away just before Christmas. The first league game back, it's not even Norwich at home, you know, like from maybe something like last season. You say, do you know what, you can make a couple of changes. It's Aston Villa away with a new manager and then one that you really can't afford to lose any ground. It's sort of, there isn't really much respite where you can say, oh, let's just give Salah that night off or Van Dijk or whoever. It has to be Liverpool really, really putting a team out that's going to get the job done. And that, you know, that is the challenge for the manager. I'm not saying that they can't do it. And I'm not saying the manager wouldn't sort of relish that challenge. But from my perspective and our perspective, I think we look at that fixture list and think, God, January could be a tough month.
Yeah, and February as well. I suppose we might, again, we touched on Chamberlain before. It might be that he becomes a four player. Because ironically, all our midfielders are pretty much back. They're nearly there now. The latest one's Arthur. It was actually your goal colleague, is it Romeo Agresti who said, like, you know, good news on the front for Arthur. The return to Brazilians seems closer than initially assumed. The Liverpool could already have him available by the end of the month because his last checks were positive. And we've seen him he's been away and saying he's been wearing some baby shorts on the beach.
I'm not 100% sure. I don't know if that's Romeo, just something I lost in it. I think it's the end of January.
Yeah.
I think it's the end. I don't think it's the end of December. So
well, that makes sense. Yeah. By the end of
but
the
it's
month.
Early, that's it. That would still be earlier than expected. Yeah. But I mean, he is. Arthur's one, isn't he, that just sort of... I've been guilty of it on this show. You sort of go, oh, yeah, Arthur as well. You know, you sort of roll your eyes, but he'd be useful now if he was available. You'd be looking at him... I mean, you'd have him in the... probably have him in the side for the City game, you know, just to give him a
game. He'd be starting Wolves, wouldn't he?
Yeah, yeah, and you'd be looking at him saying... And as much as, like, he's at risk of becoming one of those sort of Stephen Colker, Ben Davis sort of remember when sort of players... He's a player of decent pedigree. You know, played for Brazil, he's played for Juventus, played for Barcelona. You know, he's no idiot, and he's no sort of, you know, a nothing player. But he's just sort of in keeping with Liverpool season when everything has sort of been falling apart. He's been falling apart with it as well, rather than being the man who steps up and says, you know what, listen, I'm here. I'll bridge a gap here for a couple of months. That was the sort of, I think, the rather optimistic hope that Liverpool made when they signed him, and it hasn't worked out that way.
Right then, there you have it. Three clips from three apps. absolute fire pieces of content in your ears. If you want to check out redmenplus.com, go and do it right away. And yeah, you can get those shows that we've just clipped, plus many, many more, including the whole back catalogue of features, documentaries, interviews. Check out my Liverpool debut in particular, a fascinating docu-series that is happening right now. Basically, yeah, talking to Liverpool players about the times they made their debuts, but not just the games. What was the club like at the time? What was the city like at the time? Yeah, it really is a fascinating series. We're nearly at the end of it, but you can go back and watch and or listen to them all. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. Right then, yeah, go and check that out. That is redmenplus.com. Go and sign up, get those shows in video and podcast form. And yeah, I'll see you all next week for another edition of Red Men Weekly.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.